Hi there, Carrie and I have a quick ask before we start the show. If you've been enjoying these breakout stories, please subscribe and leave a review.
It really helps with our visibility out there in podcast land, and that helps more people hear these great stories. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
One of the jokes I have in coaching is, you know, the surefire way to kill passion is to build a business around it or marry it.
That's professional gardener and business coach, Monique Allen. During her four decades of running a landscaping business, Monique saw a crucial need amongst her fellow creative and trade-based entrepreneurs. They started a business because they loved their work, and then suddenly they became managers and stopped actually doing that work that they loved.
The minute you take your passion and you decide to build a business around it, you now have to put that passion somewhat aside and learn a new thing. Most people who come to me to receive coaching, their hair's on fire.
In this episode, Monique shares the special struggles of trade-based entrepreneurs and the story behind what she calls lifescaping, which is her coaching method inspired by the elements of all healthy ecosystems. Lifescaping helps business owners push beyond their barriers and thrive as entrepreneurs.
Welcome to The Breakout, a show about smashing through life's little boxes and forging your own path. I'm Dr. Carrie Ulrich.
And I'm Kelly Gunther. Carrie and I are people and change experts and best friends. We've spent more than 25 years helping organizations navigate change and get the best out of their people.
Come on, we know change is hard, but staying the same can even be harder. On The Breakout, we prove that you can escape expectations, and best of all, we show you how. Oh, Monique, I'm so excited to talk to you. What have you broken away from, and what do you help others break away from?
The overarching thing that I broke away from is the trauma of entrepreneurship. Being an entrepreneur is a very, very interesting thing. I actually studied entrepreneurship as my undergrad. That was my degree. And I did it because I am the firstborn of an immigrant. My father was from Syria. We're Syrian Armenian. And his family was self-employed in Syria. And so he came here to study. My mother's American. And they started a business. And so I grew up in a self-employed household. And I also grew up with a lot of trauma and, trigger warning, some abuse in my family. And so it's very interesting to me how, even though all people have all sorts of traumas, entrepreneurship really does pull on traumas, especially when we are creatives or when we're people who do physical trades. Over time, I've really learned how to be a very, very good seasoned landscaper in the world that I work in, which is regenerative, sustainable landscape. But as I became bigger, as I became a corporation, I realized I had to learn about people. I had to learn about HR. I had to learn about how to develop careers and all these things that I never thought about. I thought, you know, my world was to develop conservation practices. And so in doing that, I began to really transform my company. And that's where the coaching was born. I began to then help other landscape companies not figure out how to landscape, but to figure out how to navigate the world of the labor market, the world of people. And so my job now is I'm the CEO and creative director of the Garden Continuum, which is my flagship company. I'm the lifescape coach, and I work with several small businesses, not all landscape companies, to help them deal with personnel, not as an HR consultant, but really as how do we align ourselves with ourselves so that we can then connect with other people and go bigger. But the thing that was really, really important to understand is that the minute you take your passion and you decide to build a business around it, you now have to put that passion somewhat aside and learn a new thing. It is absolutely required. One of the jokes I have around in coaching is surefire way to kill passion is to build a business around it or marry it. Like, it's just, you know, because what happens is now you're steeped in it on a daily basis. And unless you have practices that help you to engage in how do I go through the drudgery? How do I make explicit agreements with myself. This was hard for me. I just wanted to get out there and work. And so that was really big. And I sort of gave myself the title, the gardener of people.
I love that.
When I finally understood that even though I'm a gardener, even though I love design, even though I'm really into sustainability and regenerative work and all of that, my primary goal, my primary effort is around making sure that I'm cultivating really, really good people within the industry, within my company, so that we're doing great stuff, right? So yeah. That was big for me.
Yeah. I read this stat that entrepreneurs were disproportionate bipolar. Have you heard this stat?
I haven't heard that stat, but I've definitely heard that there is a correlation between trauma stories, like real big mm-hmm. trauma stories, deaths, loss, abuse. There's a lot of addiction that comes into mm-hmm. the trades, the service trades. Most people who come to me to receive coaching, their hair's on fire. And neurodivergence is huge in the trades.
Talk a little bit about that.
I didn't even understand that term, but I was able to later in life self-diagnose myself as dyslexic because I have a lot of behaviors that they're dyslexic. And then understanding that I'm an incredible visual tactile learner. So I have a lot of trouble if somebody wants to just tell me something in passing. I'm a person who takes copious notes and my notes are like art, right? Because once I've done that, it's like I'm imprinting it on my brain. And I was 40 before I realized I wasn't stupid.
Oh.
Because the school system would call me stupid that, right?
100%.
And so I was struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Then I realized that a very high proportion of my employees were people who in school had IEPs. And then I realized that I was drawing in very sort of mild autism and Asperger's, just mild cases, highly, highly, highly functional. But then realizing that there was something really amiss about my communication and how it would land mm-hmm. and how they would then translate that information and then go do the thing. And so I had to start reading and self-educating to understand that it's just a reality of the people who are in the business.
Yeah. You do something called lifescaping.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Not manscaping, as some people have heard.
Lifescaping.
What? Tell me about lifescaping.
Yeah. So lifescaping was born out of a frustration of my industry. I mean, I started in the industry in 1986. And as you can imagine, a lot of things changed over that mm-hmm. roughly 40-year period. In 1973 in Massachusetts, we had the Wetland Protection Act that was put into place. And I'm a wetland specialist and a conservation specialist, but that didn't come until I was about 20 years in. And so what began to happen is I was getting frustrated and I kept trying to educate away from conventional practice. And what would happen is I was constantly repeating myself. And I thought, gosh, I need to figure out a framework, like something. Like, what could I just say that meant something? And I landed on lifescape because the two things that I was seeing, sort of the polarities, were what I would call deadscape. These are landscapes that you see like in commercial yards or supermarket parking lots, unfortunately, around a lot of houses, where the plants are just like, they're just kind of like living. They've been sheared to within an inch of their life. They've been chemically fertilized and chemically controlled. And it's like, stay, stay, stay. And it's just, so to me, that was a deadscape. And then on the other side, because of HDTV, we now have more people with more access to more information. And when we commoditize things and we make a throwaway culture, we can make things super cheap. And so everybody can have everything. And mm-hmm. what we started to find was featurescaping. And so I was like, oh, well, we should be lifescaping, right? That was the term. And then I thought, okay, now I've got to codify it. And I decided that lifescaping basically meant that you needed to start every endeavor with organization. And then with that organization, you had to bring your sights into health vitality. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then from there, now I can look at wow factor. Now I can look at the bling and all the fun and flash.
Yeah.
The problem is fun and flash sells. Health and organization is boring. And mm-hmm. so I wanted to lead with organization because it's very hard to stay in health when there's disorganization. Mm-hmm. And so it's organized, healthy, and wow. And after I wrote the book, Stop Landscaping, Start Lifescaping, I was already actively coaching. I was coaching already at that point. And then I realized, oh, geez, look at this. Lifescaping applies to everything. You can organize to be healthy and have wow factor in your marriage, in your business, you know, in your exercise routine, whatever it is. So it ended up being this really cool, easy mission statement, right? It's got to be organized, healthy with wow.
I love that. Organized, healthy, and wow. What came across to me is how much she cares about people learning how, you know, and that's most likely because she was told that she wasn't smart, that she's not learning. And so a lot of times when you're told that, you want to help others because you don't want others in that situation. That's why most of us choose our professions too, right? Because something happened that's why we're drawn to a certain profession or another. So absolutely delightful. And I love all her nature examples and just beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I identify with her for that reason of a judgment being made or, you know, feeling inferior in some way and in her own way, striking out and doing something that really spoke to her passion and allowed her to help others in the process.
She was in a very male-dominated industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, landscaping tends to be very male-dominated. So even to have the way she speaks in a male-dominated industry, that's even more interesting to me. A lot of times you have to mimic their loudness or yelling or I worked in construction for a hot second. There was a lot of intense energy, let's put it that way. And so for her to be the way she is too in a male dominated was fascinating. So she's just this kick ass chick. And you know how much I like my kick ass chicks, Cal. So.
Oh yeah, 100%.
You've referenced it a little bit, but what you have a gardening metaphor about ecosystems and life management. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So basically this is regenerative landscape. This is our regenerative work. And the idea with regenerative work is that we are looking to work within a system rather than work by applying product. So markets become very product driven because product is a very easy pipeline to make profit, right? So we make the product at the smallest price we can, and then we sell it at the biggest price we can, and we spread it out in the biggest geographical range that we can. And that's not bad. It just is the way that works. Nature is never going to allow you to be 100% product focused without coming unraveled. So nature is a system. So when we look at ecology, it's the living and non-living things in connection with each other, with the overlay of energy and human interaction. This isn't all that much different than how businesses are formed. And so our job is to work the system, to really understand the system. In nature, it's there for us. And we need to look at how is the system in balance or out of balance? What are the elements that are in balance or out of balance? What are the inputs that we can do to help to put the resources in the right places so that the natural sense of the system will wake up and begin to reorganize itself? So with ecology, let's talk about soils. I wouldn't say it's easy, but it's pretty straightforward because the ecological system of soil, depending on where you are, is very easy to take apart based on science. If we're looking at a business, and this will be right up your alley, you think about culture. We know that culture happens whether it's driven or it isn't.
100%.
If the owner is not developing the cultural structure through mission and values and training and all of that, then one strong character in the company will drive that culture and often drive it into the ground.
Exactly.
So it's really the whole idea is let's work with the systems, not with the products. The products are there to just support the system. It's not the product's drive.
I love that. And we can learn so much from nature. And I love that you pull these lessons from nature. There's a cool thing about breaking the paradigm. And then there's also like, how do you work within what you have? And so there's balance of it. My husband's a painter and he's always like, nature has the best colors. He's like, stop trying to create some kind of new artificial color because he knows it right away. He's like, that's artificial. And he's quite a diva about it too. So
unless it's a safety vest, then like artificial.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. Yeah, there's a reason for that one, right? There's a good reason for the system because we don't want people to get hurt. So works within the system. You mentioned some of the traits of the employees with the neurodivergent and just differences. What makes it hard then if I go into, I have HVAC, what makes it hard for me then to be a business owner? What are you seeing that makes it difficult for them to be successful in business?
So good. I'm going to back up a second. There's a book, The E-Myth, which I'm sure you know. And the E-Myth is the entrepreneurial myth. And the entrepreneurial myth is that I am a trade professional and, or I'm a professional in anything, right? Anything, HR. I've been working for HR companies mm-hmm. and I know my HR. I just know it, right? And so we're a technician. We know it from a technical standpoint. And then we are promoted and we become a manager and we know the thing really well, but we actually have never mm-hmm. studied management. We don't actually know yep, what management 100%. Is. And then when we go to become a business owner, there's ownership and then there is that leadership, these two pieces. And mm-hmm. ownership isn't the same as leadership. And a lot of times what happens is owners end up owning a job. They just own their job, right? They don't actually own a business. And when you own a business, the key is then people work for you and they work for a system so that it's not so much for you. And so I think the struggle that people have initially is to untether themselves from whatever that technical skill is that they have and begin to embrace the difference between leadership and management. We like to say that you're not leading and managing at the same time. It's like on a seesaw. Sometimes you're mm-hmm. in management mode, sometimes you're in leadership mode. And the key is to maintain as much balance as you can. I think the reason people struggle and the reason I know I've struggled is because we don't know ourselves very well. You know, we don't understand that we can become triggered. And the way we are triggered at work is very, very similar to the way we're triggered in family systems. And that if we have a problem with a particular employee, that employee might be articulating a mother wound or a father wound with you. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's not your job to fix that. But if you haven't tended to yourself,
yes,
it's going to be very, very hard to see what's going on with other people. And there needs to be this separation so that we can stand in grace and patience for the people around us and then really be there in mentorship for them. That is not why most people start businesses. They start businesses to make money, 100%. To be their own boss, mm-hmm. right? And to do it their way.
Yep.
So it ends up being kind of a fist fight.
We'll get back to the interview after this quick break.
The Breakout comes to you from Abrachi Group. We offer coaching and consulting to help you dig into change. Here's what we know. Only about 10% of us are really self-aware. Without self-awareness, improvement is tough. Because if you don't know what box you're in, you can't break out of it. That's where we come in.
We've got a soft spot for people itching to forge a fresh path, the high flyers who need to be nudged out of career ruts, teams who are looking to become more aligned, and yes, even those bold souls who've occasionally worn the jerk badge. Connect with us at AbracciGroup.com. Kelly, I'm thinking, how can we work with Monique? And now she becomes a part of Abrachi Group or we're part of Lifescaping. I don't know. But no, you're so the self-awareness piece. I mean, that's what Kelly and I talk about all the time for managers. Like you better, we say you were nice, like tend to it. We might say you need to get your shit straight before you start. So I don't know, Kelly. I think Kelly, Monique, Carrie, a new group. I don't know. I'm just putting it out there. How are you feeling, Kelly?
I mean, I'm inspired by you for, first of all, Monique, I think for having taken everything that you've learned about yourself and applied that to a career that really is your passion and then flipping it a bit and kind of reading the tea leaves and anticipating what challenges lie ahead in the industry with people that you're working with so that you can be the best version of yourself for them. And the vulnerability that you show as well in being able to explain your story, because I think that's something that's really important in leadership too, is that we don't always have it all together and we have a lot of unanswered questions. And especially being an entrepreneur, it is stressful, exhilarating. You can have all those feelings in the span of honestly a minute. And you've really carved out a mechanism and a methodology to make it work. So congratulations to you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you've talked about this idea of reclaiming and reclaiming your passion. So could you talk a little bit more about that and what that looks like?
Yeah. The relationship we have with the things that light us up, it's slippery. It's hard to hang on to it. And it also taps into almost addictive behaviors, right? So if I love chocolate and I just love chocolate and I keep going after it and I keep eating chocolate, like at some point that gets to be not so good. And either I can't stop eating it and it's creating health problems, or I don't like it anymore. I actually have had it so much that I lose the taste for it. So passion is a really, it's elusive in the sense that it's a great way, like a kindling or an incredible fuel to start a fire. But if we keep putting gasoline on a fuel, you can almost drown the fire. And so we have to think about more sustenance-full kinds of things to keep our passion alive. And then we have to be committed to it. There's a great psychiatrist, might be a psychologist, but Esther Perel, she's all over Instagram these days. And she talks about relating. And she wrote a book called Mating in Captivity. And it's very, very interesting to talk about this, but coupling is a very interesting way to talk about passion. And so she talks a lot about how passion and rote repetitive action can't sustain passion, that passion needs distance, it needs air, it needs ingenuity, it needs attention and intention, and we need space, we need to breathe. And so when I'm talking about rekindling passion with people, you know, I try to help them, like, all right, how are you going to get a massage if that's your jam? You know, how are you going to get on your sailboat if that's your jam? I just bought a motorcycle and I am doing it because I love the yoga, but there's something about being on a motorcycle that is so freeing. So it's like, what's the thing that you can do that brings you back to yourself? It's different than just a hobby. How do you come back to yourself? And how do you come back to yourself with the intention of asking the question, how was my passion first kindled? How did I feel in my body bringing that somatic awareness back when that passion was fully ignited? How do I feel when I'm dropping out, where I feel like it's getting dampened, like somebody's literally just put a fire blanket over it? And another really great book is Big Leap. And that book, they talk about these quadrants and a box cut into four boxes. One box is your zone of incompetence. The next box is your zone of competence. The next box is your zone of excellence. And the final box is your zone of genius. Passion is often connected to that zone of genius. We just can't keep it all the time. And what ends up happening is we get smushed into our zone of competence and you feel like you're in this lackluster feeling. Then if you come up to excellence, you're so good at something that you can't promote yourself out of it, right? Like you don't get to taste the genius because you're so good at this, you're boxed into it. So I try to use all of these different modalities to help people start to become reintroduced to that somatic sense of self and now start to see if they can translate that into, oh my gosh, I was so lit up when I was doing this thing. All right, well, what was that thing? And work on it from that angle.
I think one of the things I really adore most about you, Monique, is your ability to take these concepts that are big thinking and you make them so palpable for everyone. You've done a lot of research, clearly. You've really done just an amazing job of really making it so user-friendly and sticking to like the key principles of each so that each person can figure out what they want for themselves so that you are choosing a place to reignite that passion and find that part of yourself again. Because you're right, to stay in that genius mode or to stay in that high adrenaline mode is not sustainable by any means.
No. And I really think that a big thing that has happened in the coaching world is the blueprint, right? It's like, get my blueprint, get my roadmap, get my blah, blah, blah. And that's really only yours. If you're walking in someone else's footsteps, then you are not being authentically you. And I think it's very hard for people to wrap their heads around the fact that they are unique. We're all human beings, right? So there's a ton of similarity, but there is a spark of uniqueness in everyone. And finding it is one thing, claiming it is something else, because the claiming it has a lot to do with our sense of self-worth, our sense of general worthiness, in the world, and then a fear of visibility. And I will tell you that writing a book, what a freaking humbling experience. It took me 5 years to get that damn thing written. It was so hard. And I felt like every step of the way, it was such a slog until I did find this amazing editor and writer who really helped me clean it up and move it around. But man, the bashing, the like internal bashing that I gave myself to write this book was profound. So we have to be gentle with ourselves to understand that when we step into these different spaces, we're going to struggle with worthiness. We're going to struggle with our own demons. Everybody's demons are different. But, you know, they say new level, new devil. So every time you level up, you're going to meet the next devil. And you're going to have to make peace with that devil. And it's really, really important is not to make the devil bad. We should call it a monster instead of a devil. Not to make the monster bad. That monster is just being a monster because it's been shut away in a closet for so long. And it's like, oh yeah, now you want to talk to me? Watch me, you know? And instead, what we need to do is be like, what do you need to say? And you make friends with it and then you integrate it into yourself and you become a more multifaceted person with more access to yourself.
She spoke a ton of truth about starting your own business and how hard it is. Kelly and I, who are about to celebrate our 7 years together, we did the research and what is it, Kel? 70% of the businesses by their seventh year are out of business. So the odds are not with you. It is really, really hard. And just because you're good at one thing doesn't mean you can run a whole business on it.
In every entrepreneur, there are things that you're not going to want to do. And Carrie, you and I have said this before, I think, that we would never have ventured out to do this on our own. But together, we make a much better solution. The way that she has kind of put steps together, start with the org, you know, focus on your health and vitality and your wellness, and then the wow. When you look at things like that, and there's a formula to it, and it's a fairly simple formula that she's developed. It's not something where you need to read my 20-step guide, my 100-page workbook, you know, it's nothing like that. But that's enough for an entrepreneur to get behind, to realize, you know, I can do this. I can see why someone would say, I absolutely want you to be my coach, because you've lived this, taken it down to the studs, to use a construction term, and really kind of rebuilt and looked at yourself totally from all angles to create this beautiful practice that you've developed. It is everything that you encounter. It's going to be another set of challenges, but that shows you're growing. Yes. So you have a minute with someone who is stuck and they want to break out, Monique. What is it that you tell them?
I think the first thing is to get them settled, nervous system settled. When we're in a dysregulated state, our brains just don't work very well. I mean, we just move out of the prefrontal cortex into the lizard brain, into the limbic system. So I think the first thing I would do is try to get them to settle, try to get them into their body. So I think the key for me is the minute I would have, I would say, okay, can you sit and settle? Can you put your feet on the ground? Can you take your hands and rub your palms together? Get some heat in your palms. And I want you to put your palms over your eyes. And I want you to breathe. And then I would guide them through some breathing. And then I would ask them a very simple question. Can you remember a time when you didn't feel you were in struggle? And have them talk about that. Because if I try to immediately talk to them about QuickBooks and why it's important, I'm basically going to keep them in dysregulation. If I can get them back into their body, there is a wisdom that is in there, which is the same wisdom that's in nature. If they can get there, even in that 1 minute, maybe they would tap into something that if I had to leave after that minute, they would at least be at a place where now they had access and they wouldn't want to let it go.
Again, congratulations to you on everything that you've created and built for yourself and are paying it forward by helping others find their success within and their passion and what reignites them and such sage wisdom that you've shared with us. I'm so grateful to you.
Thank you. It's been phenomenal. There's a yoga guru that I follow called Sadhguru, and he does a lot of business education. And one of the things he says is humans are not a resource. Resources are consumable. We consume it and then it's gone, right? He said humans are a possibility. And if we can look at humans as a possibility, then we can turn and look at ourselves and see that possibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're just solidifying that we all have to work together because you're far beyond any human resources, which I hate that term anyway, but it is what we have right now. But it was so lovely to meet you and thank you for all you're doing.
Thank you so much.
That was landscaper and lifescaper Monique Allen. You can learn more about Monique's fascinating coaching method in her book, Stop Landscaping, Start Lifescaping. All the links you need are in the show notes.
This is The Breakout from Abrachi Group. At Abrachi Group, we specialize in coaching and consulting for brave new directions. Connect with us at abrachigroup.com.
And don't forget to subscribe to The Breakout so you never miss a new episode. And make sure you're following us on Instagram at The Breakout Pod. I'm Kelly Gunther.
And I'm Dr. Carrie Ulrich. See you next time.